Welcome to Traffica Europe Radio, Europe's literary radio station, free online. My name is Clayton McKee, and I'm excited to be back with you this week for another episode of Traffica Europe Radio. This week, we'll be hearing from Traffica Europe's summer intern, Veronica Miskovits. She'll be interviewing Lemko author Olena Dutch-Pfeiffer about Lemko writing and Lemko literature more generally. Before we get into today's episode, I just want to remind everybody that there's a membership on patreon.com/trafficaeurope. There, all members will get access to all the latest news of Traffica Europe, and depending on your tier, you can gain a lot of access to a lot of different possibilities for new content or content in different versions. Finally, I'd like to remind everyone that our latest issue, Essential New Literature of Lesser-Known Languages of Europe, is now available to purchase in print. You can find a link to that in the show notes, on our website, www.trafficaeurope.org, or on amazon.com. Just search Traffica Europe, Essential New Literature of Lesser-Known Languages. Now, let's get into today's episode. Elena Dutch-Pfeiffer's works were actually included in our most recent issue. You can take a look at those. I'll put a link to the show notes directly to her poems. Her poems are presented in original language in Lemko and in English translation by Elaine Rusinko and Bogdan Orbel. Now, let's hear the interview. Veronica interviewed Elena in Polish. She then translated the episode into English. Veronica voices her own parts in the English translation. And Olena's parts, also translated from Polish by Veronica, are voiced by the amazing Sabrina Canelli, who has voiced many other authors and translators on this podcast. Enjoy the episode.
Hi, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe where you're from, where you live now, and what kind of work you do, that sort of thing?
The thing that most deeply characterizes me, at least the thing that has built up to characterize me over several decades of being alive, is the fact that I am Lemko. The fact that I was born into a certain community that suffered a great shared trauma because it was displaced from the land that they are living for centuries. The land where they cultivated their culture, their identity. Looking at the political climate from 1945 and 1947, Poland was shaping itself into a unified country. They had to assimilate the minorities, and that was done through displacing them into two areas. The majority would be in what is currently Ukraine, and the smaller part, which my parents were a part of, lived in the Carpathian Mountains. So, as an additional cultural identity, we're also Highlanders. The culture is closely tied to the mountains, and that is something important to me that really shaped me. Of course, I can't tell you everything about the Lemko, but to define my Lemko identity, what I grew up around, what shaped me, and the writing that I am doing now is exactly the historical and cultural context that I was talking about. For example, the displacement of not only my parents, but the other 35% of the Lemko population that was moved to the western part of Poland in 1947. I was born in the area that my parents were forcibly relocated to, which was a strong Lemko community that saw the high value in the world and strongly resisted the forced assimilation. I was born in the so-called
Obczyzna,
or foreign land. There's a phrase that we use for that.
Urodziłam się na Obczyźnie.
I was born there 14 years after my parents moved there as the youngest child in a family with 5 kids. I was very lucky, speaking from my perspective as well as the perspective of my family, that my parents were always thinking about moving back to Lemko, lands and in the mountains. Finally, 6 months after I was born, they decided to do so. So while I was born in Poland, I grew up where I should have. Unfortunately, this was not on what was once my family's land, but it was still in the mountains. This is my Arcadia, my space, my world. Even though I work in Krakow, in the city, the mountains are the standard that appeals to me. What determined my life was that I was a very talented and sensitive child. I really understood family tradition, which was mainly conveyed through emotions. From my childhood, we talked about sunsets. I educated myself and developed a great interest in oral culture. Oral culture where people would talk a lot, people would tell stories, and where people would sit together and talk about this past world. About this
Lemkovina
that is no longer there. I know exactly what life was like and how people lived from the accounts from my family. This happened in all Lemko families, so as not to forget. That story about the sunset from my childhood really shaped my sensitivity, and that's probably where I was talking about stems from. I was blessed with great love from this land. For this community, history, identity, for all of this is my childhood, and you can say my gift. Without this, I would be completely different. I have suffered a lot because of this, but I am also trying to take advantage of it since I have access to something that doesn't exist anymore in a symbolic aspect, and to not separate from it again. My childhood was also shaped by the fact that I was not surrounded by minorities or any Lemko people. They weren't in school or in publications. They weren't anywhere. It just consisted of stories that families told and what you talked about at home. That world was at home. The first poems that appeared were published when I was in high school, when the Lemko community as a whole started appearing again. This really moved me. Then, when I was in college, I started being interested in language, and back then it was an interest in the study of Slavic languages and the study of Russian. So my happiness was first shaped by this emotional side of my family, and later through this research-based perspective. This perspective of self-interest in which I could take advantage of my resources more and more. In this moment, I say that I built myself an army and a fleet in regards to languages and dialects. You know, languages are just dialects or that have any army and fleet, meaning that it is something that dominates a part of the world and other cultures, especially the small minority cultures. Theory, history, and all other aspects are things that I have been learning about and continue to learn about in order to be one of the few spokespeople on the topic. Our history relies on the fact that these people exist. On an individual level, we carry the weight of this institution and society. And because the society gives us opportunities, I was able to earn 3 degrees in what is arguably the most prestigious university in Poland, Jagiellonian University. I picked this university and my fields of study in which I wrote about the Lemko people because they show both my professional education as well as my emotional one. It is something that sort of gives me this mound of freedom. By having this background that becomes useful in these individual projects, it strengthens my position. Now, I am at the stage that I believe that this is a necessity to protect our cultural nativeness that sets us apart. That's how I understand everything now. When it comes to this geographic or encyclopedic perspective of life, I'm currently working as a professor at the Jagiellonian University in Krakow, in this Slavonic philology department, specializing in linguistics, literary studies, and cultural studies. I direct my studies and observations towards the literature, language, culture, and identities of Lemkos. I have had lots of academic publications, and my understanding has really been shaped by all of this Lemko literature that I have consolidated. Lemko literature is not this empty, meaningless symbol. When writing my first book, I started with the first stage of literature, when this identity was forming again. Right now, this book is available in English and in German, so it's fairly widely available. It gives a chance to show people this culture. I am also working on an amazing second release right now, which is a contextual dictionary of the Lemko language. It is a dictionary that takes context into account, so the linguistic models of a dominant language, in this case Polish, does not influence the words in the dictionary. Over 16 years ago, I led something called Lemko Philology, but it was a supplementary philology topic. In 2017, it was shut down because it encompassed a fairly difficult organizational structure. Right now, I still teach Lemko, although sometimes I'd rather that my students take over that aspect. I've also presented poems that I could talk about, and I generally write in Lemko. That, in its own, is an achievement because I was educated in Polish schools and in the Polish language. My imagination and textual word was in Polish. Now, I first write in Lemko and then in Polish, and that feels really good. I feel very fulfilled by this, and I think I better express myself in this way. Family-wise, I have 2 sons, and we speak Lemko in our house. just like in the house where I grew up. The language's future is not looking good, but for right now, it's all right. It is holding on.
Great. Thank you so much. I was actually just about to ask a little bit about the history, maybe more about Lemko publications or literature, which you touched on a bit. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Meaning the situation and the language, yes? Right. Why wasn't it there? I said one thing, that after 1945, Poland was building itself into a monoethnic country, assuming that there will be no minorities. There were 7 minority groups that were recognized, but the Lemkos were not one of them. We were grouped apart into being a Ukrainian minority. Lemkos were allowed to learn their mother tongue, but that language was regarded as Ukrainian, and Ukrainian isn't our mother tongue. The Lemko language was founded, you can say, very precariously from 1911, when magazines were first published in the language. Lemko groups were really making an effort to have their own independence. Formerly, the Lemko language existed in a very restricted and controlled manner as a minority language. Of course, because it was not a part of the 7 minority groups that were recognized, you could not teach or publish anything of that language. But of course, that is speaking after the period after World War II. Before that, you could, but after, in the PRL, the Communist Poland People's Republic, you could not. Although in Ukrainian periodicals, each recognized minority group had their own designated periodicals in which they had to, of course, publish appropriate things. But it was in their language. In the Ukrainian periodical,
Nasha Slovo,
there was a Lemko column. Lemko people really pushed for this and got it. When I was writing my thesis for my master's degree, I ended up reading a lot of text from this column. Another source where this language was written and could be preserved was in immigration documents. Immigration documents of Lemko people, specifically immigrated into the United States or Canada, worked very dynamically. Karpatho Rinsen magazines also published in Lemko. Additionally, the language was also able to survive through more unofficial methods, like through religious teachings done in Lemko. Then, in 1991,
Uście Gordyckie,
Lemko, was finally started to be taught in school. Then, other schools also started teaching it. Whereas the first opportunity that we saw for openly displaying our identities was in times when Solidarity operated as an anti-authoritarian movement. This was a time when cracks began to form in previously established totalitarian methods. Then, as it often happens, literature and poetry played a big role in continuing the momentum. Literature is an institution. Through literature, you can really reach an audience. You can awaken emotions. The beginnings were very dependent on the political situation in the country in which we live. The next steps, which I was already involved in, were to gain status in a minority ethnic group. That means, among other things, that Lemko can be taught. In 1989, this was finally made possible and the first Lemko Association was founded. Then, in 2005, it was recognized by the lower house in Poland's parliament. Lemkos finally achieved the status as a minority ethnic group. And that gave us certain rights and protections. First off, there is the official protection of our language. If that happens in practice is another discussion, but it is formally protected. In terms of publications, I mentioned that the Lemko circuits were very isolated. For me, this breakthrough moment was when the Nowy Sadz Publishing Company started publishing Lemko poems in 2 languages. This was important because it was the start of cultivating an outside audience. This invites a lot of things like new criticism, new opportunities to say what you want to say, and new opportunities to talk about your life. It gives the community a vision for the future, and it unites the community. In that aspect, it was very important to me. Later, we took advantage of opportunities that let us publish in external environments. We have new projects to work on and new ideas to act on.
Yeah, and when it comes down to poetry or even generally about literature, are there any defining characteristics to Lemko literature, whether it's themes, forms, techniques, or stylistic characteristics?
Of course. Just like any other literature, as a category, Lemko literature is something that needed to be defined. In my book about Lemko literature, I wrote about what I understand. Right now, I also need to show that this is literature is good enough to be shown in other languages. Of course, you can say that literature written in Lemko is Lemko literature, but I don't limit it to just that. It is even more complicated in individual pieces, but I won't look at individual pieces. Talking about Lemko literature, though, I am actually for the first time leading a class called Carpathian Literature Discourse. Even for that, I had to decide what I would teach, what works I would show, and what would be included. And that makes me a little confused, because if you're asking what motives and different literary elements, then the things that shape these features and the environment in which one is in the environment that shapes an entire culture. And of course, language shapes that. Therefore, there are elements that are often tied with the mountains, with ethics, and with certain aesthetics. When I go with ethics and aesthetics, there are certain values within those things tied to people who live in the mountains that differ from that of other people. Each sort of vertical change is different to a horizontal change. Historically, verticalness has had more of an impact on ethos. It is much more established. Elements that are tied to the earth are very common because it is post-displacement aspect in literature today. That's because the emotion of pain dominates it, and that is how emotion is expressed. I'm, of course, constantly talking about Lemkos, but we're just one part of the Carpathian Rusnys. Carpathian Rusnys live as a part of different groups, and that is also one way of our culture development unity. We do live in different countries, and that is definitely one thing that differentiates us. Since the later half of the 19th century, we can start talking about this formed identity about the 19th century literature that is truly amazing and developed. Even at that point, I can see the motives about life and about certain rules. Rules such as where community is important. That is, of course, a key characteristic of local rooted groups who live in close contact with the earth. And that community, due to the fact that they had to confront religious, linguistic, and cultural differences, is very specific. A second mechanism of this community is your ability to be alone.
Petro Murianka,
a Lemko poet, wrote about this in his 2007 autobiography, The Vistula Flows On. This autobiography really displays these characteristics that I've read about in these books written in the 19th century. They have stayed true to today. They have a certain continuity. For example, we have always wanted to live in hopes of being useful to someone else. You know, according to this modern world, there isn't the responsibility to your community, only focusing on your own rights and individual needs. This usefulness to others is fairly unique. And that's why I referenced ethos earlier. And of course, aesthetics. Aesthetics are also tied with a way of gentleness, you can say. For example, one of my friends said that Beskids, a series of mountain ranges, and the Carpathians are low, mild mountains. Of course, character is closely tied to us. We didn't really have these wars in a typical sense. In history, there weren't these elements of aggression. Of course, the base of the culture was agriculture, historically without serfdom. This also contributed to our self-reliance and ability to be by ourselves. Orthodox culture also emerged and started influencing us. I define literature as a response to shared challenges, challenges that arise. Literature always gives us a response, whether it's protests, a rebellion, support, or acceptance. It is always impacted by what is happening socially. It was shaped by this spatial landscape, an ethnic model. Going back to
Petro Murianka,
his writings show different elements, especially historical ones, how they impacted us. Additionally, this paradigm of pain created by
Murianka
called pain in our genes. Yes, that is a paradigm of pain. But there's also this paradigm of building a home that he writes about. When I compare a Belarusian home with a Lemko home, in poetry, of course, then the breakdown of grief is different. Maybe they left their home and went on to live in a city. Maybe it's building a new, forever home. This aspect of being able to build a new home in a community of people who are forced to move out of that community. That home is built from ashes, from memories, from everything you can. That's why that ability to be on your own that I talk about is so important. From that ability is why the distinction between
Optrizna
and the mountain still exists. We pay attention to our
Optrizna
and not our worlds.
Great, thank you. I know that oftentimes bilingual authors also say that their poetic voice changes depending on which language they're writing in. Do you think your poetic voice changes depending on which language you're using? You know, does one maybe invoke more emotion or feel more personal?
Yes, language is definitely direct. My first works were written in Polish, but it was really important for me to be able to create works in Lemko. In terms of creating, I was create auto translations. After assessing my works, I think I write better poems in Lemko, and then Lemko versions are just better. The language is a lot more concrete. Right now, I'm working very hard to see differences between Polish and Lemko, because for many, the patterns in Polish almost automatically start influencing my Lemko. I already have these patterns noted because I've been working on this for a very long time. But we see that oftentimes things were written in Lemko using Polish grammatical structure. There's something in languages that I refer to as institutional or central that went through a sort of abstract. I tie this into another concept by an author who talked about dead languages that were verbs that means the culture is alive. This is because culture as a concept is, in fact, a verb. When it is no longer alive, then it is a civilization, not a culture. This verbality, though, is a very important mechanism of language. In this way, the world that is wanted to be expressed is able to be expressed. This is not something I was always aware of. I just looked at a lot of poems, and they were, of course, a lot of nouns, since times when things were solely verbal. Very developed civilizations often change their nouns over time. When I teach Lemko, someone asked, for example, how to say, I'm going to go buy groceries. No. In Lemko, you say, I am going to buy. This is a difference in the phrases that I often repeat and emphasize. That new phrase then looks a lot better, and it reads a lot better in Lemko. It sounds like native Lemko, not a fake version of it. When I write in the Lemko version first. It organizes itself a little bit easier in my head for me, even in academic publications. Then I translate it to Polish by myself because I'm very capable of it. But I'd still much rather write in Lemko first because I know it's going to encompass what I would like to say much better. In my writings, I'm not only concerned with Lemko-ness, but it is, after all, the language in which I express myself. Still, I'm happy because I don't only live in Warsaw, Poland. I also live there for half of the year. And then the other half of the year, I live in Lemkonia. There, I am totally connected to everything that has shaped my culture. It's nice to know I never separated from that connection either. It's also like I'm trying to return to it more, especially through language.
Yeah, and you talked a little bit about translations and that sometimes translating from Lemko is a bit difficult, even from Lemko to Polish, and to English is probably a completely different story. But, you know, I know you don't translate your own work into English, but are there any words or expressions you find particularly difficult to translate into any language, ones that are maybe strongly tied to Lemko language and culture?
Yes. When it comes to these specific names, like specific dishes or spices or pieces of Lemko clothing, only have specific Lemko names. Vocabulary or lexis is obviously very important, but syntax is just as important. After all, it's how the words are actually presented. When it comes to certain expressions, then I'll give the example of a young school-age girls in Poland who are often asked, "Can you say something in Lemko?" Of course, these girls would often use a phrase they knew that was completely not understandable by Polish speakers and really difficult to translate. Of course, there are a lot of similarities between the two languages because it's Slavic languages is spoken geographically close to Poland, so they influence each other. There are still many words and phrases that are not similar. It is also a Carpathian language and is unique in its own way. This set of languages is tied together in a completely different way. When it comes to the contemporary work with languages, some utilize really antiquated words that are not really used anymore to connect to the ones that are used or they use words that are phonetically similar to connect with words in other languages. For example,
chat
or
chatować
on the internet. In Lemko, the word
chatina,
which are the branches for a fir tree. These are the sort of play on words that were accepted over time. It shows that the language is alive, and I definitely see it today.
Yeah, and it's even interesting to hear that English words like chat and link have started to also impact different languages.
Honestly speaking, you can say that for any given language, it moves to other areas through the verbal repertoires. We definitely see this in the Polish adopting English words, though to a large degree. Polish has even at times started adopting English syntax, and these linguistic rules that are very strong in English are being transferred to Polish. I'm not worried about it, but I'm also not in favor of it. Some of these words are simply taken from Latin and are kind of universal words, and you have to take that into account.
Now, since we'd like to focus on minority languages, would you be able to tell us a little bit about some Lemko authors you recommend?
Yes. In terms of contemporary authors, I would recommend a few. First, I mentioned him before.
Petro Murianka.
That is his pseudo name, but his real name is
Petro Trochanowski.
He is no longer with us, but he died not too long ago. There is also
Paweł Stefanowski, Władysław Graban,
and
Stefania Trochanowska.
Right now, there are also a lot of young authors using modern media like blogs. For example, there is
Natalia Małecka-Nowak.
She writes very interestingly. She's someone people should definitely look to when it comes to young creators. I also try to do these tests, and recently I spoke to a young woman who looked like she was interested in writing. She said she does write, but right now she writes in Polish, so she needs to gain a bit of confidence to write in Lemko. We have really interesting but individual works because my graduate students often had to write for me. For example, we've had a graduate student write about science fiction in Lemko before, and it actually has been published. These are individual things, though.
Amazing. Finally, are you working on anything at the moment that we would or that we should be looking forward to in the future?
Right now, my academic work is taking up a lot of my time. Something may come up because I have so individual poems that deserve to be published, but I really don't have time right now. I need to work on some other documents. I think that something will slowly come to be, though. I think something may come to mind, and I can let you know. Right now, I'm focused on meetings, and I'm thinking about the young up-and-coming authors. We're losing the language, especially because many people choose to write in Polish instead of Lemko, so that is something to work on.
All right, well, I definitely hope someone will be inspired and we'll see some new work soon. That being said, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it so much. Have a great day.
This has been a conversation between Trafica Europe intern Ronika Muskovits and Lemko author Elena Dutch-Pfeiffer about Lemko literature and Elena's poems that are present in essential new literature of lesser known languages of Europe, Trafica Europe's most recent issue. I've already mentioned our membership at patreon.com/trafficaeurope, as well as the printed publication of our latest issue, both of which can be found through our website, trafficaeurope.org. I'd like to also mention a few other ways that you can contribute to Trafica Europe. If you're financially able, you can make a one-time donation at our GoFundMe page. The link to that can also be found at our website. Some free ways you can contribute to Trafica Europe are by liking, commenting, and sharing any of our social media posts, or by rating our podcast on Apple, Google Podcast, Amazon Podcast, Spotify, anywhere where you listen to our show. Our hope is to bring European literature to a wider audience, and we can only keep doing that through our continued collaboration with our listeners, with authors, and with translators from all around the world. Thank you so much for any willingness to collaborate with Trafica Europe, and thank you even more so for listening to this week's episode. Have a great day.